Afghanistan, healthcare, the economy, topics for our regular political observers, E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post and David Brooks of the New York Times. Welcome to both of you.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
And first, Afghanistan. E.J., do you think the prospect of a possible second-round presidential election in Afghanistan alters in any way the discussion within the Obama administration over, say, strategy and troop levels?
Well, I think the administration is praying that President Karzai is forced into a runoff, which would allow a do-over for what was a very flawed election. I think the nightmare for the administration would be for Karzai to come in with, say, just 0.2% over what he needs, which would only underscore the problems in the election. And that, I think, would strengthen the hands in the administration, people like Vice President Biden, who are skeptical of a deeper commitment. But I do think the long process that Obama has gone through and the fact that it is very public that he's gone through this long process has helped him. It diffused the artificial sense that there's a military crisis in Afghanistan, and there is no immediate military crisis. And it made it easier for him, I think, to face down those who insisted wrongly, I think, that if he didn't send 40,000 troops right away, he wasn't taking things seriously. I think everybody knows he takes this seriously.
David, you agree?
Well, you know, in every insurgency campaign, you have a problem with the legitimacy of the government. That was true in El Salvador, Iraq, Greece, and various other places. The crucial question is, do you, the U.S., and the local regime have a confluence of interests? Do you have the ability to influence the regime and improve their institutions? And I think what we've seen over the past couple of weeks is we do have some ability to influence the Karzai government to force them into this period of examination, possibly to root out some of the corruption and force a runoff. And so it's sort of a positive step that at least we have influence to improve the institutions. Now, there's a long way to go. You've got to improve the local institutions, the governing councils, and things like that. But as a step, we do have a confluence of interests, and we do have the ability to make things institutionally at least a little bit better.
Let's turn to a big domestic issue. David, this week the Senate Finance Committee passed a health care bill. There was a confluence of interest between all the Democrats and one Republican on the committee. Have we now seen the future of health insurance in this country, and is it a future that you're at all happy about?
Oh, it looks just like the past, only bigger. You know, we're still going to have – and first, it should be said what happened in the past week and this past 2 weeks, and makes it very likely that something's going to pass, I think. And not only Olympia Snow, but also her colleague Susan Collins of Maine has sent some signals of interest in getting involved in the process. My problem has always been is I think the problem is fundamentally screwed up. The problem is the fee-for-service system that rewards service, not health care. And what's emerging from Congress will not fundamentally change that. We will still have the underlying perverse incentives, and we'll still have expanding costs. And so it's good to insure more people, but we're not really have health care insurance. We have health insurance.
Health insurance. EJ, you wrote this week about Senator Olympia Snow. For all of their almost 60 seats in the U.S. Senate, one Republican from Maine, you say, is in the driver's seat.
Yes, and she's the most popular, sought-after person. It's almost like the role Sandra Day O'Connor used to play on the U.S. Supreme Court. And I think a lot of people on the left are uneasy. They say, well, Snow will make the bill more conservative. I'm not sure that's true, at least in all respects. Yes, she is a little reluctant to impose an employer mandate, which I think you do need to make this system work. But one of her core obsessions is exactly the right obsession, I think, which is how do you make health insurance more affordable for middle-income people? You cannot impose a mandate on middle-income people and then not give them affordable insurance or enough subsidies to pay for that insurance. And I think people like Snow and Senator Schumer and also Senator Wyden are going to push this bill in a better direction. We'll see what she does on the public option, the other big matter of fighting, although the public option seems to be steadily gaining ground, I think.
But that's exactly what busts the budget. If you give people more subsidies, then it's going to be much worse for the fiscal situation of the country.
Well, what is
not
it?
If you pay for them.
There's a radical thought right there.
This is a paid-for bill. Everybody, you know, we throw around these big numbers, $900 billion. There are a lot of taxes in this bill, and one of the reasons it's so hard to reach agreement is that they've agreed that they will pay for this bill, and right now it is paid for, which is why the CBO keeps scoring it positively.
David, what will it say about or to the Republican Party if only Olympia Snow and Susan Collins of Maine, or perhaps one other senator, and who that might be, join in this? Are they simply outside the entire process of crafting one of the biggest reforms of the social and economic system of the country?
Yeah, if I were in the Senate, which hasn't happened so far, I'd probably be where Olympia Snowe was. I'd say something's going to pass. I might as well try to make it as good as possible, or at least as deficit neutral as possible. Nonetheless, I think most Republicans basically have a philosophical objection. This is a very centralized approach to reform, with people in Washington really making centralized decisions to try to expand coverage and to keep down costs. I think Republicans do not believe in that kind of centralized approach. They would like an approach where you have cost-conscious consumers in a regulated marketplace making key decisions. And so there is a fundamental philosophical divide, and that has not been bridged.
Okay, one other point here, briefly. EJ, you once remarked here many weeks ago that it's remarkable how the tone of discussion can be affected by an uptick in the Dow Jones, especially when there have been a lot of downticks. 10,000 level was passed by the Dow this week, and the 10% unemployment rate is also looking like it's within reach. Can you be upbeat with those numbers?
You know, the Dow 10,000 is good news for people's 401ks, so a lot of middle and upper middle income people are happy. But that good news on the stock market, combined with word about these obscene bonuses on Wall Street, will only underscore that for those without jobs or people on short hours, it'll underscore how big the distance is between their situations and Wall Street. So I think for the president and his economic advisors, it's both a blessing and a curse.
David, there's a bad word for one time for one word.
Well, we just don't know how to create jobs. We've got a stimulus package. So far, it's not creating a lot of jobs.
Thank you. David Brooks of the New York Times, who joined us from San Francisco today, and E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post, who spoke with us from Philadelphia. Thanks a lot to both of you.
Thank you.